There we go. Okay, so last week we saw David really hit his stride. His king, after some false starts, after some mistakes, a few areas where maybe came up short, last week everything really came together. And we saw the idea of tikkun driven home in multiple areas. As David is not only atoning for his own mistakes, which he does when he puts politics aside, and really prioritizes, principle when he takes a strong stance to Rechav and Bana, the assassins of Ishbosheth. And I saw also last week someone had asked that wasn't it against the halacha what David did, the way that he killed them. So I think I was a little bit unclear. David executed them the way in a normal fashion, presumably just a regular execution. After they were executed, he then put up parts of their body. That is normally against the halacha. It is true. You're normally not allowed to string up body parts. Clearly, that had been done as an extreme emergency measure because David had to show the urgency of the moment. That's something a king is allowed to do. That's in the category of Morei B'Malchus. That's in the category of what the Ran, his drashot, explains is called the Mishpat HaMelech. That's what he's allowed to do. But David did not kill them in a particularly torturous manner. There would be no benefit to that. So there was nothing to legalize that. But so David reacts strongly to the assassins of Ishbosheth. Then we finally have the uniting of Yerushalayim. We finally have the defeat of the Plishtim and the end of the Plishtim as a military threat. So it was an amazing, amazing run of success for David personally and for Bnei Yisrael as a whole. Many of the outstanding failures that Bnei Yisrael have had going back all the way to the days of Yehoshua and the beginning of Shoftim, when they are not driving the Canaanim out of Yerushalayim, are being cleaned up in Parakeh. And so now what we're going to see in Perek Vav is a new challenge that David has to deal with. And that is, how do you deal with success? The dangers of success, right? What can that do? And we're going to see what it can do. In Perek Vav, it's going to be very interesting because we're going to see two things. Number one, we'll see the dangers of success for David. And also, this is going to be the one Perek which really gives us a window, really more than any other Perek, at least in the Sefer Shmuel, a window into David's religious worldview. David's, the relationship between David and the Ribbono Shel Olam, his Avodas Hashem, that world which we see on display every single day when we open up Tehillim, is really going to come into the fore with the learning we're going to do tonight. As we see David drifting into a place where he's not supposed to be, and then classic David managing to turn himself around. So, even as before we get to the source sheet, just need to pause for a second and put ourselves in the shoes and imagine what Bnei Yisrael probably felt like as they came out of the victories we saw last week. And it was an amazing, energetic week. I felt energized at the end of this year. I hope everyone else did too. And you can imagine how thrilled and ecstatic they must have been. I mean, that victory over the Plishtim was probably the greatest military victory that Bnei Yisrael had since the days of Yehoshua, if not earlier than that. Because think about it. They've been fighting against the Plishtim for generations. And not just, they're fighting against the Plishtim. They've been losing to the Plishtim for generations. These are people whose relatives have been killed in battles. These are people who've had to pay taxes to the Plishtim. These are people who've been occupied and dominated by the Plishtim. Their king Shaul was just killed in battle a few years ago. They've suffered and suffered and suffered. The Chumash and the Tocha, which talks about waking up in the morning and waiting for the evening and vice versa. They've been terrified of the Plishtim for years, and now all of a sudden, overnight, that threat is gone. It's gone. David has wiped out the Plishti threat. He's going to come back and finish them for good in a little bit. But we are never, ever going to see the Plishtim invade Eretz Yisrael the way that they did last week. And elsewhere in Sefer Shmuel, we see they had seriously penetrated Eretz Yisrael. They had a garrison, actually, in Beis Lechem. Beis Lechem, that's right south of Yerushalayim. They marched right through Emek Rephaim, right into the middle of the country to attack Yerushalayim. They were able to go wherever they wanted, and all of a sudden, it's over. It's over. David and the army chased them all the way back to Gezer, all the way back to the land of the Plishtim, and that threat has been eliminated. We can imagine the relief and the excitement and the euphoria that Bnei Yisrael feel in that moment. Think about it. We have a unified monarchy. We have the capital city in Yerushalayim. We've had two victories over the Plishtim and one which is a greater victory than we ever could have imagined. And it's obvious that that is not just something which, you know, secularly all excellent strategy and politics. It's clear we have our Ribbono Shel Olam is back on our side. Hashem is on our side. He's protecting us. We now have an amazing Melech whose religiosity and dedication are obvious. We have incredible generals. We have a united people. Like, everything is incredible. And we can imagine at that moment, that is a time where they are in danger, and David is in danger, of getting carried away. And that is exactly what we're going to see happen in this parable. What happens when there is too much success, too much confidence? Bnei Yisrael feel too much closeness to Hashem and security, and that is going to lead to disaster. So it's the sketch that we'll learn about tonight. So we're going to learn the parak. We're going to learn about the return of the Aron to Yerushalayim. We'll learn about the initial failed approach, the subsequent successful approach, and then at the end, when there's going to be the epic confrontation between David and Michal, I think we're going to put that on the side. I think next week we'll take a break, and we'll spend a week. I think it's just that there's enough there. And I think it's so important for David, especially, take a week to just zero in on that relationship. A few weeks ago, we talked about David and Yonasan. We gave that a solid chunk. So we'll really zero in on David and Michal next week. We're going to get the early pieces of it at the end of this year. And so let's open the source sheet and dive in. So on 1 second. Okay, here we go. All right. So we ended last week. The last pasuk of the parakeh, they win this amazing victory. David does as Hashem is commanding. Hashem is telling us what to do. We're asking the Urim Tumim. The Urim Tumim are answering. They chase the Plishtim from Geva all the way to Gezer. Okay, take a look at the map. Geva is over here in Shevet Binyamin. Gezer all the way over there. Look how far they're chasing the Plishtim. They're never going to come back. It's the most amazing victory that Bnei Yisrael have had in centuries. Now, the way the Navi presents it is that immediately afterwards, what happens? David gathers 30,000 men. And then immediately, Vayakam David, Vayakam Vayelach David, Cholam Asherito, Mibale Yehuda, to Lalos, Misham, Ace, Aron, Elokim. They go immediately to Bale Yehuda, which the Sefer Yeshua, Sefer Divrei Hayamim makes clear. Bala was the original name of the city. They also call it Kiryas Yearim. It's the same city. It's the northern border town of Shevet Yehuda. It's right over here. So you have Yerushalayim. Here's Beis Lechem. Remember the Plishtim. The Plishtim before the battle, there was a Plishti garrison in Beis Lechem. And the Plishtim were able to march straight through Emek Rephaim. Now all of a sudden, there are no Plishtim in Beis Lechem. There are no Plishtim in Emek Rephaim. All of these cities who've been dreading the Plishtim for centuries, they're gone. They're there. They're never coming back. Jewish army, right? They chase them all over here. And now the Navi makes it sound like they're going to go straight to Kiryas Yearim. Why? Because the Aron is there. Why? We'll talk about that in a second. They're going to grab the Aron, bring it to Yerushalayim. They're going to build the base of Mikdash, and it's going to be amazing. We have a king. We have military success. Amalek is gone. The Plishtim are gone. We'll build the base of Mikdash. We're going to have an Aron. It's going to be amazing. Now, let's remember the Aron is here because at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the Jews fought a battle against the Plishtim. It was a catastrophe. They lost. The Mishkan at Shiloh was destroyed. The Aron was captured. Miraculously, afterwards, there were plagues which struck the Plishtim. The Plishtim send the Aron back. They place the Aron in a wagon. They take a couple of cows. They leave the cows' calves at home. The cows, despite every instinct any mother cow ever would, they jump off straight like a radio guided, you know, like they have a GPS system or something, and they just go by themselves straight, carrying the Aron to Beit Shemesh, which is the closest Jewish town to where the Plishtim are. The Jews at the time do not show enough respect to the Aron, so they suffer terribly. The Jews send the Aron on its way to Kiryas Yearim, which is right over here. And that is where the Navi tells us the Aron remained for decades. So for decades, Bnei Yisrael had a very strange situation. The Aron was over here in Kiryas Yearim, which is in the land of Shevet Yehuda, while the Mishkan was in the land of Shevet Binyamin. First, the Mishkan was in Nov. That's where they rebuilt it after the destruction of Shiloh. And then after Shaul destroys the Mishkan in Nov, it's rebuilt, presumably by Shaul himself, in Givon, which is Shaul's hometown. So you have the Mishkan over here in the land of Binyamin. You have the Aron over here in the land of Yehuda. For some reason, and we'll speculate as to why in a few minutes, they never bring the two of them together. And now, David, having defeated the Plishtim, has said it's time to end this situation. We're not going to have a separation between Mishkan and Aron. We're not going to have some temporary tent. We're going to bring everything into Yerushalayim on Har HaMoriah. And it sounds like they're going straight from the battle to Kiryas Yearim. If you look at the parallel story in Divrei Hayamim has what Sefer Shmuel does in one parak, Divrei Hayamim does in four. So they make clear that it wasn't quite as rapid. David did bring all of Bnei Yisrael together for this occasion from north to south. It was a national gathering. But still, the sense we get is that this is happening very, very, very quickly. This is not a step that is being taken with maybe the gravity that it should require. Moving the Aron to a new permanent location is not something that should be done lightly. It's not something that should be done rapidly. And it's not something that should be done regardless of how ecstatic everyone is. You know, it has to be done with a certain menuchas nefesh. And the way that they make the original decision at this moment of unbelievable enthusiasm, we're going to see in the next few psukim how things quickly unravel. And the basic mistake which Bnei Yisrael make, the basic mistake which David makes, and that is a mistake which we'll see it comes from a good place, but it is a very, very strong danger for somebody of David's religious bent. So we see, first of all, it's just interesting, let's throw this out here, in Divrei Hayamim, when David wants to bring the Aron, so David just mentions, Lo dirashnuhu bimei Shaul. We never sought the Aron in the days of Shaul. Shaul's whole reign, the Aron was left in Kiryat Yearim. He never moved it. For some reason, David thinks that's important for us to know about. We'll talk about that later. But they bring the Aron, and maybe with not the, you know, all the necessary procedures and protocols and thought going into it. It's happening very, very quickly. Pasuk Gimel tells us something very surprising. They take the Aron and they put it in a wagon. It doesn't belong in a wagon. Rashi quotes the Gemara, which says, the third graders know you're not supposed to do this. David made a mistake in something which even the Tinoko Shel-based Rabbah know. The little kids know. How are you supposed to carry an Aron? That Aron is supposed to be carried on the shoulders of the Levian. Torah says, Ki avodas HaKodesh, Shalem HaKasef Yisrael. They carry the Aron on their shoulders. It's not supposed to be in a wagon carried by animals, even if they're brand new, never been used before animals. It's not how you carry an Aron Kodesh. There's a reason why, of all the utensils of the Mishkan, the Aron is the only one where one of the 613 mitzvos is not to remove the poles of the Aron. Those poles always have to be there. You never touch the Aron Kodesh itself, despite what happens in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. You're never supposed to do that. And it is not supposed to be carried by animals. The Malbim right here has a very nice explanation as to why that is the case. The Malbim says, take a look. He says, hey, what does the Aron represent? He says, we know that the Hashem, the Shekhinah, as it were, dwells above the Kruvim. In fact, that's exactly what the Navi says right here about the Aron. It's a place where Hashem is Yoshev HaKruvim. So that means that the Aron, Kaviyachol, is the earthly equivalent to the heavenly chariot, so the Merkava on high. So the Malbim writes that just like the Kruvim are the Merkava for the Shekhinah, so Ra'ui Shenose Aron Yidamu on Nose HaMerkava, just like the Merkava on high is born by angels, Asher Dmus Pnei and Pnei Adam, who have the faces of men, Velo yinasu ashor b'chamor. The Merkava, when Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel have their visions of the Merkava, Merkava is not being carried by oxen and donkeys, even strong, brand new, never been used before, oxen and donkeys. No, the Merkava is carried by Malach. So too, if you have proper respect for the Aron Kodesh, you should realize the Aron Kodesh is not supposed to be carried by wagons, by animals. It's supposed to be carried by people, by those with Tzelem Elokim, and in particular, as I say, it's supposed to be carried by the Anshei Kodesh. It's supposed to be carried by the Kohanim or by Levi. So there's a big problem here that they're putting the Aron in a wagon. It's coming. The Rashi says it. Taba davar shafil tinoko shel beis rabba. If they had put in the elementary procedures and precautions, they would not have done this. That is what happens when things happen quickly. When things happen hastily, right? We've all experienced this. Something can go wrong where once you realize the mistake, it's like, how on earth could that have ever happened? The answer is because when there's a rush, when there's just a lack of proper dedication and reflection, obvious things can go wrong. Now, Rashi points out, he quotes the Gemara, says there's something else that's happening here. It's very related. Because the Gemara has a comment that why did David fall for such an obvious mistake? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Tehillim where David calls the Torah Zmiros. Since David said, Zmiros hayolichu kecha beveis migurai. When I was wandering, all the years David was wandering, what kept him going? The years he was on the run from Shaul, learning Torah, his connection to Ribbono Shel Olam. But David, in a moment of Ava, in a moment of love, he says that Torah was like a song. It was like a song for me. Well, Rava says in Gemara and Sota, it's very nice. It's really very inspiring that David finds such inspiration from Torah. But when you're calling Torah a song, something, when you're calling Torah a zemer, something is wrong. There's a lack of reverence here. And the basic problem that we have in this parak, and the basic problem that David has to deal with is he has a personality which is one which can go too far, and we can say too much Ava, too little Yira, too much enthusiasm and too little fear and awe and stopping for a second to take stock. Right? David is a quintessential man of action, man of energy, man of enthusiasm, man of charisma, and that has a host of benefits, and it differentiates him from Shaul in many, many different ways. But that also means that it's easy to go too far. And what we have here is Gemara's telling us there is too much Ava. And when that happens, when there's not enough of a balance, when the spiritual scales get out of whack, that can lead to disaster. And so the mistakes begin to pile up. They run to the Aron too quickly. They make the glaring mistake of having the Aron being carried by a wagon, which is against the Pasuk in Parshas Nasa, coming from just a lack of reverence. Malbim argues that, hey, who are these people who are in charge of the Aron over here? Well, the Navi tells us that the Aron was in the house of Avinadav. Now, Avinadav sounds like he was a very important person in the city. That's probably why he had the Aron. And the city, we said, was Bale Yehuda. It's a border town of Yehuda. It's men from Yehuda who are living in the city. So presumably, Avinadav is from Shevet Yehuda, in which case he would be Yisrael. It's not necessarily the case. The Dat Mikra argues that Avinadav was a Kohen, and his name has a bit of a Kohanic name. In fact, Avinadav, you might notice two names that are smushed in here, Nadav and Avihu, which is going to be important because the parallels to the next part of what's going to happen in them are blatant. There's a reason why this parak is actually the Haftorah we have for Parshas Shemini. But the Malbim says the Pshat is, these guys are not even Levium. And Divrei Hayyam really is going to make that very clear because Divrei Hayyam, they're going to make a big deal about bringing Levium in after this all goes wrong. But they're not Levium. So David is having, you know, the local notables bring in the Aron. Uzzah is the name of the guy who's walking in the back. And Achyo is the name of the person in the front. So we have another mistake. And then we have the last war pasuk, which really is the king. Where the Navi tells us, so it's going to be a little bigger, David chobeisom esachim lifnei Hashem. So David and everyone else, they're playing before Hashem. And then look at the Navi tells us all these different instruments that they're playing with. Atzi Veroshim, Kinoros, Nevalim, Tupim, Minanim, Tzaltzalim. Okay, maybe, you know, one of you is more interested in music than I am, so maybe this is more interesting for you. But the it's not normal for the Navi to do. You know, the Navi is not normally given to granular detail about the musical instruments. And I remember last week we were trying to figure out how Bnei Yisrael conquered Yerushalayim, right? The greatest moment ever. How did we conquer Yerushalayim? And we needed to parse one word. The Navi gave us one word about something about the Tzinor, and the Mefarshim spent so much time trying to figure out what that was. You know, so if one word on how Yerushalayim was conquered, and the musical instruments were for the parade, we have like six or seven different ones. Like, why on earth do we need to know about that? Like, what? Who cares, Frank? So the Malbim basically picks up on this and says that the sense that you get is what was the environment here? What did it look like? If we were watching them bringing the Aron from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim, we would get the sense of a wild party. All of Israel is there. They're all playing, and it's a hefgervelt. Some people are bringing these instruments, and you have kinorot and nivalim. Everyone's bringing whatever they have at home, and they're all just in a, and it's beautiful in a way, in a sense. Right? It's a natural and organic and spontaneous expression of love and enthusiasm. So everyone comes together. Right? The Rayam told us, all of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, everyone's coming together to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. But it's going too far. The Malbim says we can identify two problems over here. They're playing, right? The Navi says, Misachakim. And he says, Lo derech schok, velo kismechim berada. They are not rejoicing in trembling. There needs to be a blend of simcha and Yira, and that is absent over here. And secondly, he says, who's supposed to be in charge of the singing? Leviim are supposed to be in charge of the singing. And Leviim have dedicated individuals. They have dedicated instruments. In fact, the Levi who's the head singer is Heman. Not Haman, Heman, who is Shmuel Hanavi's grandson, is in charge of the singing. But he's on the sidelines. Shmuel's grandson is on the sidelines. It's just Kol Bnei Yisrael. Anybody who wants is showing up, and they're having a great time. And that's not the way that it is supposed to be. You know, the Rambam, when he describes the celebration, the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the Beis HaMikdash on Chol Hamoed Sukkos, so he says there was a tremendous celebration, but who were the ones who were leading the celebration? It was the greatest chachamim of the generation. It was the spiritual giants who led the celebration. And everyone else was there, but everyone else was on the sidelines because it was clear they were going to have a situation where, on the one hand, we're going to have tremendous rejoicing in the Beis HaMikdash, v'samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem. The place to rejoice is in front of Hashem. But there also has to be a certain level of control and a certain level of distance and care. And that is going out the window. We do not have smechim b'ra'ada, which, as the Gemara says in a couple of places, the blend which is required of ivdu es Hashem b'yira v'gilu b'ra'ada, serving Hashem in awe, right, trembling, rejoicing in fear. And the Gemara says, b'makom gila sham tehei ra'ada, the place of rejoicing should be a place of trembling. That is the blend which is required by the Aron Kodesh. Let's take a step back and think. What does it mean? What does it mean to have a Mishkan? What does it mean to have a Beis HaMikdash? What does it mean to have an Aron Kodesh? On the one hand, it gives us the opportunity for the most unbelievable experience of closeness with Ribbono Shel Olam. There's a reason why, of all people, David HaMelech is the one who is desperate to build a Beis HaMikdash. You can go to the Beis HaMikdash and you can directly encounter the Shechina. That's what we daven for every single day. can offer karbanos. You can see the kohanim. You can see the kalim and the you know the miracles that happened over there. It gives us an opportunity. Sorry, the asuli mekdash v'shachanti besocham. It's Hashem's resting place on earth. The aron, the place where the shechina itself is yoshiva kuvin. It's an unbelievable opportunity for closeness. And yet at the same time, it is specifically in that place, in the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the place where we have the greatest opportunity to approach Hashem and offer karbanos, right? Literally, lekarev, to approach, to become close, is specifically that place where so many protocols and fences have to be put into place. If you're a Kohen, you can go here. If you're a Levi, you can go here. If you're Yisrael, you can't go here. If you're Tameh, you can't do this. You know, the Kohanim had to be extremely, extremely zealous, right? Different levels, different situations. All the halachos of Mora Mikdash, a certain awe that has to be felt. Because if you're going to have that opportunity to approach Hashem, that has to be tempered with awe. And that is the failure in this parashah. Having had the amazing success of the battles, and the Plishtim, and Yerushalayim, and the kingship, and the unity, and the real feeling. They can feel that Hashem is with them. I mean, they think of like the moment probably felt not so different, in fact, in some ways, a lot stronger than the immediate aftermath of the 1967 war. You know, different in some ways because it wasn't after 2,000 years of Galus, yes, but they have Yerushalayim. They've pushed out the Plishtim. They're bringing back the Aron, everything what they've dreamed of for hundreds of years coming back. You take that feeling of euphoria and that not just, you know, like abstract feeling, but that real genuine feeling of closeness with Hashem, and we can see how for anybody it can go too far. And somebody of David's spiritual makeup in particular, it can go too far, and that's exactly what happens here. And so mistake after mistake after mistake is made, culminating in this just wild party as they bring the Aron back. And so what happens? It ends in disaster. They're bringing the Aron back. Suddenly the cattle, the oxen stumble, which is clearly not a coincidence. I mean, when the Plishtim sent the Aron, the Plishtim didn't know any better. They don't know a safer Bamidbar, so they sent it on a wagon. Well, at that time, the Navi said, those oxen went straight. They didn't miss a single step. No one was leading them, and yet they had no problem getting to exactly where they wanted to go. Suddenly, the cattle stumble. The Mefarshim all say that indicates that they should have noticed that something was wrong over here. Uzzah, who is right behind the wagon, sees the cattle stumble. He places out his hand. Whole long discussion of what happens, but the easiest way to understand what happens, by thinking of the psukim themselves, by Yochez Bo, he grabs the Aron itself, he touches the box, he comes too close. He doesn't touch the poles, he doesn't touch the wagon, he grabs the box itself. There are other things he could have done as he saw the Aron falling, even if it was falling. If that Yira was there, he could have stopped it a different way. But the year is not there. And so he just runs to grab the box. And you can't touch the arrow. You can't come too close. Immediately, Navi says, he kills Uzzah on the spot. Al Hashal. Rashi and Mefarshim say this means, I see they translate it. It was an error. It was a shkaga. It was a mistake. It wasn't a willful, malicious act. But that doesn't matter because Uzzah is not being killed for his sin. He's being killed because you cannot come too close. You can't come too close, as Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo yirani adam v'chai. Person cannot come too close to me and live. That's why the story of the four Tanoim who go to Pardes, right? Ben Zoma, Ben Azai, Elisha, and Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says that Ben Azai, he got too close. He succeeded. Whatever exactly the Pardes was, he penetrated too far. He succeeded in going where he wanted to. But Rashi there quotes, Ben Azai has to die because you can't come that close and remain on mortal earth. And that is what happens with Uzzah. It is the culmination of everything that has happened so far. The failure to temper the Ava with Yira ends in a world where he touches the Aron himself and immediately is struck down. There's no open miracles by and large do not happen in Sefer Shmuel. We've transitioned to a world of kingship, but here we have an exception. Now, just parenthetically, this is why the parallel to Nadav and Avihu is so important, because that is exactly the same mistake that they made, right? At that same moment of euphoria, after all the tension, after the Chet HaEgel, and will we ever be forgiven, and all the months of collecting for a Mishkan, and building a Mishkan, and dedicating a Mishkan, and bringing the Kabanos, and hoping, maybe Hashem will forgive us. Will the fire come down from Shemayim and burn the Karbanos? At that moment of unbelievable release, when Moshe and Aaron bless the people, the fire comes down and Bnei Yisrael are in ecstatic, right? They've been forgiven for the Chet HaEgel. At that moment of closeness, what happens? Nadav and Avihu say, we want to get even closer. They grab their ketores, they go into the Kodesh HaKadashim. Can't do that. The Ava needs to be tempered with Yira. And that's David's mistake. But now what's amazing, right? Here is, you know, David's quintessential David on display is what is his immediate reaction. Vayichar l'David. The Malbim points out, we know, like, normally we think of Vayichar as meaning angry. So right here on the previous pasuk, Vayichar af Hashem be'uza. Right? You're angry at someone. The Malbim points out, when you have Vayichar Le, that means that the person he's not angry at someone. It is reflexive. It is a feeling of either anger at oneself, or it's a feeling of reflexive pain. So he quotes, for example, Cain. The pasuk says, Vayichar Le Cain. Cain feels that after his punishment. Shmuel has that. So the Navi says, Vayichar Le Shmuel. Shmuel feels that agony after Hashem tells him that he's firing Shaul for failure to get rid of Amalek. David has a moment, not of external blame, not of denial, and there are many ways he could have done it. He could have blamed Uzzah, he could have blamed the people, he could have blamed Hashem and said, really, Hashem? So radical a step for such a small infraction? He touched the Aron in a moment of protective instinct, and he gets struck down in front of the whole people. The whole party we have is ruined because he just touches the Aron. That's enough. There are many, many directions David could have gone. Instead, a yichar l'David. David feels internal agony. He realizes his mistake, and what's the proof? Look at the next pasuk. Vayira David es Hashem bayom hahu. Now the yira comes back. The awe comes back. The fear comes back. David realizes that we need a correct. We've gone too far in the direction of Ava. We need the Yira, and he brings that back immediately. Right? Happens in two psukim. He doesn't blink. He says, I'm not at a state. The Aron is not just some box, and I'm not just some person. I can't bring the Aron back to me right now. I'm not worthy of having this happen. Takes a giant step back. And you can imagine, right? I mean, all the people are assembled, and they have all the harps and the violins and the tambourines, and Uzzah dies. In that moment, what are they going to do? You know, are they going to blame Uzzah, push him off to the side, and just continue to Yerushalayim? Are they going to say, okay, let's pause for a day, and then we'll recover and continue tomorrow? David says, no, I realize that there is something fundamentally wrong. We have made a basic mistake. We need to totally change course. And even though he has the entire people assembled, he has schlepped the entire nation from Dan to Beersheba, north to south, all come together for this. And on the spot, David realizes this is wrong, and he says, this can't happen. We've got to change. They detour, the Aaron is sent off to somebody, a Levi named Obed Edom Hagiti. And then they wait. And at the same time, while David is able to immediately identify and honestly identify what he did wrong, what the people did wrong, despite the many excuses he could have had, right? They identify what happened wrong, and he takes action. He immediately takes action again two psukim later, because the Navi then tells us that Ovid Edom encounters immense bracha. Rashi explains they're having many children. After 3 months, things are going extremely well. The aron is not just an instrument of death, chas v'shalom, if treated properly, is an instrument of life, just like Torah, just like the Ketores itself, the same Ketores which kills Nadav and Avihu, Aaron can bring into the Kodesh HaKodashim on Yom Kippur. And as soon as David discovers that Hashem is sending a message by giving bracha, this guy, Ovid Edom, who is now the custodian of the Aaron, David realizes now it is time to bring the Mishkan back. Right? So he's not scarred. He's not traumatized. He is reacting accurately, honestly, and immediately to the events at hand. And when he brings the Aaron back this time he does so b'simcha. This time it's done not b'schok, not with laughter or frivolity. This time it's done with true, mature, respectful joy. We'll look at the Pesukim in Shmuel and the Pesukim in Divrei Hayamim, which show this. We'll look at some of David's tefillah, which she writes on the spot. And then we'll close for next week as we turn to the story of David and Michal. But look, right, David, they're bringing karbanos. You know, it's not a wild party. They take six steps and they're slaughtering karbanos. They're realizing, you know, this is not just a parade. This is a religious occasion. The Ribbono Shel'olam is here and we have to react accordingly. All of those musical instruments are gone. Those harps and everything, that's not what the focus is on, at least here. What do we see instead? The trua and the kol shofar. We see the chatzotzros, we see the shofar, we see those instruments of the Mishkan and of the Beis HaMikdash, which can be instruments for tremendous celebration and joy. But we know it can also be instruments of yira and awe. We know the shofar symbolizes on Rosh Hashanah. We know the shofar symbolizes on a fast day, what the trua can mean. We're finding that blend. They're bringing karbanos, but they're bringing, look, the Navi says, Vayal David, olos lifnei Hashem ushlamim. First, David is bringing the ola, the burnt offering, which is a karban of total submission and awe and distance to Hashem. The Ramban explains, what's the karban ola? It's like I've done something wrong, and you know, there but grace of God go I should be shechted and burned on the Mizbeach. That's the first karban David brings, right? His own submission. And then afterwards, after the ola, lifnei Hashem, he can bring the shlamim as well, the peace offering, the quintessential karban of ahava, after the karban of yira. But at the same time, by no means does that have to detract from the joy, right? We can have a full blending of the two. And so even as David is taking the steps, the corrective steps of yira, they are not replacing the simcha, they are simply enhancing the simcha. And so we can have David famously dancing, right? David mecharker b'chol oz lifnei Hashem. Or David can be dancing with all his might and all his strength before Hashem, which we know is to the horror of Michal. But that's what David is. That's what David is doing. Two more things. Look at the Rehayamim, and then we'll look at the Rambam to close it out. So the Rehayam tells us a couple of other corrective pieces over here. Number one, David, and I didn't put the Pesukim, there are many Pesukim which discuss this in great detail. It's a whole long parak. So I just put the first three Pesukim about this. But David realizes, Lo la seis esaron elokim ki im b'levim. It's not going to be done by oxen. It's not going to be done by people. Levim are going to do this. David gathers everyone together. He gathers all the Levim, and then the Pasuk describes there, in Pasuk after Pasuk, how David organizes the Levim. They have different regiments. Everything is set up very extensively and prepared and official with who's going to be singing, who's going to be doing what jobs. The Levim are the ones running this show. And then take a look at some of the songs. The Divrei Hayyam tells us, Vayomahu az nasan David barosh lehodos lashem b'yad asaf ba'achav. So David, right, there's a song which David has for the occasion. This should look pretty similar. pretty familiar. Hodu Lashem Kir B'Shema Hodiya Bamli Lo Sav. But the song has an amazing blend of Simcha and Yira. So we can have Psukim in here in which we're saying Yismach Lev Mevakshe Hashem, right? We're rejoicing. Dirshu Hashem, we're seeking Hashem. We're energetically seeking Hashem. Bakshu Fanav Tamid, we're constantly seeking. We're hoping for the Beis Hamikdash. We're approaching. We're bringing the Aron. We're looking for that closeness. We're having that joy. And yet at the same time, subsequent psukim emphasizing the awe and the distance. He's far more awesome than anyone else. I'll skip Chav Zayin for a second. I'll come back to this in 1 second. Chav Ches, Havu Lashem Meshecho Samim, Havu Lashem Kavo Be'oz. The whole world ascribes honor and might. Se'u Mincha, bring him a gift, bring a carbon. Ishtachavu Lashem Behadras Kodesh. We're going to bow down. Rock party. We're bowing down in Yerushalayim. Chilu Milfanav Kol Ha'aretz. Tremble before him. After you go into the Velbaltima. And yet that year, that trembling, immediately then transitions to Yismichu Hashemayim Misagal Aretz, the rejoicing of the heavens, the rejoicing of the earth, Az Yiraninu Atzei Hayar. The Simcha and the Yira can come together because that is the true meaning of a true encounter with Rebbe Hashem. And that is what the balance that David is able to lead B'nai Yisrael to here in this song, which he establishes for the occasion of bringing the Aretz Yerushalayim, after they had gone too far in one direction. And this is just really, really interesting. You have the pasuk here, Hod v'hadah lefanav, Oz v'chadva b'mkomo, right? Honor and majesty before him, strength and joy in his place. I'm going to scroll back up for 1 second to go to the Gemara in Yuma, which talked about the need for gilu b'ra'ada, the blending of trembling and celebrating. Where was it? Brachos and Yuma, right? Gemara says that this is what Talmud Torah is supposed to be all about. The reason why Hashem makes Moshe wait on Har Sinai for 6 days before he brings him up after the 7th day is le'ayim alav, so he realizes the blend of the fear which needs to be accompanied with that closeness. Right? The Gemara says, bimakom gila sham teira'ada, the place of rejoicing after the place of trembling. What is the place? So Tosas right there and down the Gemara says, Makum Gila, Kidichsiv, Oz, Vechedva, Bimkamo. The source that the place of rejoicing should be the place of trembling as well is Divrei Hayamim Perek Tazayin Pasuk Chaf Zayin. That Pasuk from David's song on the occasion of bringing the Aron into Yerushalayim. That, the Baalei Tosas tell us, is the source for our general orientation to Avodas Hashem in davening, Mishnah and Brachos, and in learning, Mara and Yuma. That is the encounter of Hashem, and that is the message. So after failing, the beginning of the Parak, that is what David is living and teaching for all time, the rest of Klal Yisrael, at the Parak's conclusion. And it's not a coincidence. The Rambam is very well aware of this, and the Rambam's conclusion to Hilchos Sukkah Belulah, he concludes by talking about the joy, the Simcha Yisera, the extra joy of Sukkis in the Beis HaMikdash. And he concludes with a halacha about the general world of Avodas Hashem. And he describes, and this is the Rambam, right? This is the intellectual philosopher, rationalist Rambam, right? This is not, you know, we're not pulling someone off the streets in Uman, getting this, nothing wrong with Uman, but that's, you know, it's more impactful when it's coming from the Rambam over here, who's describing the simcha for a mitzvah, and who is the paradigm who he brings for us? It is David HaMelech's behavior in this parak right over here. Someone who's able to lower himself. Why was it, right? Why was it that David is able to dance? Michal is going to be horrified by this because Michal, who's a princess, thinks that's not the way that a king should behave. But David has the yira to appreciate the simcha he should have. He's able to realize that he may be a king, but he is a flesh and blood king. And it is the yira of Ribbono Shel Olam, it is the awareness of the gap between him and Hashem that allows him to be mashpil atzmo umekel gufo. That is what allows him to celebrate with such genuine vigor and joy. Rechim David Melech Yisrael Amar, and closely on Mizos, he says, Shafal Beinai. Right? He can be low. Vein Habdulav Hakavod, Ala Lismach Lefnei Hashem. The true joy, the true Ava, ultimately brings Gedula and Kavod, ultimately brings greatness and honor. Because if that joy can come, right, if we can recognize Hashem's greatness, and we can blend that awe and that yira with then the enthusiasm and the closeness and the real feeling of the connection, then that can lead to the result of serving Hashem b'simcha and getting as a consequence of that true gedula and kavo, true greatness and honor. So the Rambam, you know, concludes the whole Hilchos HaLulav, Melech David mifazez umchaker lifnei Hashem, right? Dancing and dancing, but ultimately doing this not by himself, right? It's not just on the streets, not a parade. This is being done lifnei Hashem. So we have the initial failure, understandable on many levels, able to be rationalized on many levels, but not for that reason. It's so, you know, so important that they're able to fully transition and rise to the challenge and ultimately come to the, you know, the golden mean, the place which literally becomes the template for our Avodas Hashem for all time. Okay, so we'll stop here, and next week we'll take a zoom out to look at the story of David and Michal, and go on for there. Okay, Shvach, everyone, thanks for learning. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.